Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast. It's a podcast, not a talk radio show, so we don't have any 1-800 number. We don't have 1-800 CNN sucks. Oh well, it's just us, Tim Graham and producer Ben Graham, bringing you the latest on media bias from Newsbusters. The hot story in our section of the media remains the alleged rape of a teenage girl in Loudoun County here. We should mention that this is one of the things that L. Brent Bozell III will be discussing this weekend on Life, Liberty, and Levin on the Fox News channel. So if you don't already watch that routinely, you better tune this in. One of the things Nick Fondacaro mentioned was that the Washington Post finally got around to this story late on Wednesday night. They posted it at 9:20 p.m. Now, even today, if you want to get it in the old physical paper, usually you want it in by 6. And so you could tell when it was posted on the internet at 9:20 that that wasn't making the Thursday paper. So we were kind of intrigued this morning. Newspaper nerds that we are, where's this story going to be in the Friday Washington Post? Oh, will it be on the front page? No. Will it be on the front page of Metro? It's definitely a Metro story. No, it's not on the front page there either. Well, where is it? B2? No. B3? No. B4? No. No, actually, you turn around to the back of the section, B8, where the weather map is. It is under it's below the fold and under the weather map. Outrage after teen accused in sexual assaults at two schools. So this is what happens. Now, you could argue that B8, at least if you're reading the weather section, you're much more likely to actually at least see this headline, that if we put it inside at B6, like next to the obits. But that is really interesting to me, especially when you go, okay, well, what was on the front page of the Metro section on Friday? Well, the top story is Youngkin distances himself from rally. They're very interested in trying to tie Glenn Youngkin to Trump. And Glenn Youngkin basically keeps trying to say, no, not exactly. But that's a big story. Their other big story on the front page was State Department heralds operation that processed more than 45,000 Afghan evacuees. So the front page of Metro is reserved for the Biden State Department and their publicity aims. Really, that's what's going to go on the front page. And then there was a news story on a zebra. We had to escape zebras here. So there's one story on they found an escaped zebra dead in a trap. Then a column by Petula Dvorak on how Maryland zebras are trying to evade capture. Just let them. Free the zebras. That's on the front page today. That's the local story that everybody should be thinking about. Escaped zebras. Then there was this one in the corner, bottom right corner. Clash at Interior injures climate activists, police. Yeah, it's interesting. So apparently they had what we might call a climate insurrection on Thursday. The crowd wasn't as big as the rally or the riot on January 6th. But obviously, when you occupy a federal building from the right side of history, it's just not as big a thing. If you look at the story by Post reporter Ellie Silverman, suddenly we're very, very neutral on protesters versus police. Or in fact, it sort of tilts against the police in this case. Now, obviously, the first joke here yesterday was, well, here it is on video, clashes between protesters and police trying to secure a federal building. I bet CNN is all over this. Now, if you put the Interior Department into the search engine, like on our SnapStream video capturing system, there's no story on this. They can still obsess over January 6th and how Glenn Youngkin can somehow be tied to January 6th and Trump, but there was nothing on this. The Post story began, police and climate activists, no ideological label, police and radical left freaks, no, you're not going to do that. Police and climate activists clashed Thursday during protests at the Interior Department, with security personnel sustaining, quote, multiple injuries, unquote, and one officer being taken to a hospital, agency spokeswoman Melissa Schwartz said. So the spokesman for the Interior Department is the main source here. We do have a police officer being taken to a hospital. This is not something that apparently CNN or MSNBC can get very excited about. Climate demonstrators were attempting to occupy the Interior Department, with dozens entering the Stuart Lee Udall main interior building on C Street Northwest. Those who remained outside clashed with police as they tried to keep the one unlocked door open. At times, protesters attempted to push past the police line. Oh, see? Can you smell the insurrection? See, part of the problem here is, one, they're leftists, and two, they weren't that big a group. They weren't as big a group as was on January 6th. The Post explains the protests were here for people versus fossil fuels. This has been going all week. 5 days of demonstrations by a coalition of groups known as Build Back Fossil Free that has included indigenous leaders from across the country. People versus Fossil Fuels said in a statement that 55 people were arrested during the protest, and here comes the cop part, including indigenous leaders, and said police, quote, acted aggressively, unquote, by using tasers on at least two people and batons to hit others. A spokesman for the Federal Protective Service, which Schwartz said responded to the protest to, quote, mitigate the situation, unquote, did not immediately respond to a request for comment on police tactics and arrests. So once again, when police clash with lefties, we need to question the police and their tactics, those bullies. Isn't that interesting? Later on in the story, you go down a ways. Roy Duran, 36, of Pittsburgh, and Ra Mariel Alley, 33, of Denver, were in the crowd of climate activists. Still no ideological label. They were in the crowd of climate activists attempting to enter the building and said they were injured by police. Duran said an officer put him in a chokehold while hitting other protesters with his free hand. Police also used tasers on protesters, including Mariel Alley, they said. The escalation was way out of proportion, Mariel Alley said. We don't have weapons, and we have a history of nonviolence. Well, something tells me that if they get out a taser or a baton, history of nonviolence is probably not the word you want to use. But this is what the left does, is that a lot of times at protests like these, they want to occupy some territory, they want to lay down in the middle of a street somewhere, and then they say they're nonviolent. But that is a use of physical force. It might not be hitting somebody in the face, but it is definitely an escalation of tactics. You want to block an interstate highway in the DC area during rush hour, you are escalating a tactic. Somebody's bound to get up out of their car and try to remove them themselves. This is what happens. They try to say, oh, we have a history of nonviolence. We have asked for these conversations. Indigenous people are not heard, and we have a right to go where our leadership can be heard. Now, would any of this work? It doesn't work if you're a white male with a red hat from a red state. You don't get to say, we came to the Capitol to have these conversations. None of that's going to work. But when it comes to the left, you can just get away with this stuff. And that's, you know, again, maybe this is too tiny a protest to be national news. But this is where you begin to say The obsession of the liberal networks with January 6th and the January 6th probe and the issues there about the use of force, you know, it is just fascinating that this is the one area where instead of focusing on police brutality, they're going to focus on brutality against police. And it was definitely there on January 6th. We should mention, as a matter of fact, that Byron York at the Washington Examiner has gone through a lot of these charges from January 6th and talked about the term armed insurrection and goes through a list of the weapons that these so-called insurrectionists had. You know, obviously, no one in the crowd fired a weapon. They did have knives. They did have bear spray. Some of them had, like, the traffic barriers as a weapon or the police shields. So, I mean, it is one of those things where when you want to get a sense of what happened, that's one way to do it. I think the other thing that's really fascinating here is, remember, these Interior Department people did what? They came inside a federal building and they sat down, or they quote-unquote occupied a federal building. We're at a point right now when you look at this January 6th prosecution and you say, grandmas from Indiana get arrested and charged and put on probation for standing in a hallway. Now, we understand, I think we can all guess, that the Department of Justice will not be filing charges and seeking to put somebody in prison or on 3 months of probation for occupying the Interior Department. So somebody walking inside the Capitol on January 6th and taking photos for their Facebook page, if you're going to treat that like it's terrorism, then you ought to. This is why this kind of story should be covered, so we can compare tit with tat. But we know we have a liberal media, and what they're going to say is, we don't like your mob. We like our mob. And you'd like to think that the news media, the so-called referees of our civil society, would say, we don't like mobs in Washington, period. We should actually behave in a more civil manner. But they seem to be like, we like mob activity and shoving around the cops when they're on our side. And now on the Newsbusters podcast, Jeffrey Dickens, the director of media analysis, is here with several hot studies the research department has come out with. We're very pleased to see that on the Fox News channel this morning, they discussed the numbers that Jeff has done on the sound bites that the network evening shows have used with the federal budget struggle that's going on between Democrats. Let's take a listen.
I want to switch gears a bit about the mainstream media, something you talk about a lot on your show, particularly network news, which is largely leaned on Democratic voices when it comes to covering Biden's massive spending bill, with a newsbusters.org report showing that after a study of 30 network news broadcasts between September 23rd and October 10th, there were 115 Dem sound bites as compared to 16 Republican sound bites. I don't think I need to ask the question, but I'm going to anyway. Why so lopsided?
Well, you know, I could understand there being somewhat more Democrats because right now Democratic infighting is causing the paralysis on the Hill. That's the story. But to have so few Republicans, those figures are eye-popping. It's like they're fringe characters to just be trotted out now and then. I think the problem goes deeper than that. You have these gargantuan, massive budget-busting bills, $3.5 trillion for one of them. And I think the press kind of presents it as, well, this is really necessary because we've got all these problems and it contains all these good programs, not really focusing on how much money this is when you have a $6 trillion federal budget or the major tax hikes that would be required. And so when you combine that with the imbalance of the voices, I think you do get a distorted picture.
Kurtz has a point about, you know, this is a fight between Democrats. That's obviously the first thing we could say. Well, they're going to have a lot more numbers of Democrats. But as I mentioned the other day on the podcast when I first mentioned these numbers, you pointed out that the radical leftists here got way more time than the Republicans did.
Oh, yeah. You're more likely to see an AOC than a Kevin McCarthy. You're more likely to see Pramila
Jayapal
than Senator Mitch McConnell. And you see them constantly pushing for more spending. And this is, I made the point in the article, it's like, how are you supposed to cut the national debt when year after year you have the media pushing Democrats to spend more and more? They don't, and they rarely bring on the Republicans. And when they do, they're pushing Republicans to spend more and more. Because, like, how can you, you know, support these heartless cuts and name your favorite domestic program? So how are we ever going to cut the debt when you have the media pushing for more spending every year?
Yes, this is one of our longstanding lines for people. We could put this on a T-shirt, people. Blame the national debt on the media.
That's right.
The national media never has seen a budget cut it likes. I mean, it may be defense back in the Reagan years.
Maybe, yeah.
But I mean, almost everything they are doing is to say more spending, and let's shame anybody who calls for less spending. Because obviously, you know, this I've said before, there's the difference between Trump 2016 and Romney Ryan in 2012. They were basically saying, hey, we've got to curtail the entitlements to look forward to the blah, blah, blah. And of course, Trump came in and said, I'm not touching Social Security or Medicare. And they never focused on that because they always had the raging Twitter fest. But I mean, that I think is part of the perpetual problem. So it is fascinating to me that what's that breakdown to? Is it 7-1?
It was 7-1 ratio.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that it's fascinating that Democrats get that much time, and when they had the Republicans, it was mostly the leaders of the House and Senate Republicans. You know, there's no
right
Ted Cruz or Rand Paul in there.
No.
So I mean, there's not really a statement there where they might say, we're going to let the Democrats figure this out between themselves. Is kind of the soundbite you get. It's not like, you know, these socialists are out of control. You know, the kind of things we would like to say.
Now, I would ask our listeners, think about it like a bizarro, if you will, to make a Superman reference.
Yes.
Bizarro world media where you had, you flipped it, and it was, you know, the reporters and anchors pressing the Democrats, we have out of control spending. Why are you adding more programs and more expensive programs? And look at this waste here. Look at that waste there. And where would our debt be if it was that world for the last few decades?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we have a liberal media. And one of the things liberals do is, yes, everything that's good should be spent, money should be spent on, you know? Well, we need to give money to Sesame Street. We need to give money to the National Endowment for the Arts. Everything is a plus. And then the other thing that you worked on is the Hunter Biden scandals, which, of course, is one of those things where the average American would say, one, who's Hunter Biden? And two, what scandals are you talking about?
Yes, that's right. So we looked at ABC, CBS, and NBC Evening News for an entire year. And they spent a total of 18 minutes, 4 seconds on Hunter Biden's scandals. This is the first son. Okay, imagine if this was, we'll run through the scandals here. Imagine if this was Donald Trump Jr. had these kind of scandals, what the media would be doing. You think he'd be spending more than 18 minutes in a year?
Yes, obviously. But I should say, Bo Biden was the first son.
Well, okay, one of the first sons. You're a good point.
He's the first son of scandal,
yeah,
I think.
Right. Yeah.
But this is the interesting thing is that, yes, we decided it's the 1 year anniversary when the New York Post laptop stories started coming out and the social media crushed it. And what you basically have is, yes, some of this is when it would have been most relevant, which was the second half of October in 2020 when the voters were still voting.
Right.
But let's remind people. This averages out to 6 minutes a network over 365 days. I mean, it is a pittance. And on some of these, I would imagine the networks might have done them on the same night. Well, if you're watching, at least in this market, if you're watching ABC, you can't watch CBS unless you're taping it on a system like we do. Nobody watches two or three newscasts. So if a network does 6 minutes, then it's probably likely you're not going to see it on the other networks. And of course, who came in at the bottom, Jeff? ABC, 2.5 minutes. Now, we could waste a lot of time, probably not for much result, but say, how much time in the last year did David Muir spend on the weather?
Right.
84 hours, because this is sort of our joke about ABC, and they like to lead with the weather. But 2.5 minutes, I mean, that's embarrassing. So the other two actually make them look slightly better because NBC was at almost 8 minutes, 7 minutes, 56 seconds. CBS at 7 minutes, 37. seconds. But I mean, this is where we try to tell you that bias by omission is the most sort of dreadful kind of bias, because you don't know what you're seeing. And that's why people are going to something like Fox News, because you're not going to get the Hunter Biden stories from these folks.
No, right. No, you have Fox News, you have New York Post continuing to publish scoop and bombshell after bombshell about Hunter Biden. I think it's just remarkable that I mean, when we go through these, some of these scandals, it's salacious stuff that normally the media would love to run right at the top of their broadcast, and they're not, because they're in the tank for the Biden presidency.
Yeah, I think Donald Trump Jr. is a good example for this, because we know that when he had the meeting at Trump Tower, that was an enormous story for weeks and weeks. I mean, if you tried to just count the CNN coverage of the Donald Trump Jr. meeting, which I think lasted for about 15 minutes.
Right.
I think Hunter Biden's porn films were longer than that. But, I mean, you're right. This is the fascinating thing, is you have two Hunter tracks, right? You have the so-called respectable track of Hunter Biden getting these jobs like, oh, I'm going to be on the board of an oil and gas concern in the Ukraine, despite the fact I've never been to the Ukraine and I know nothing about oil and gas.
Right.
That's the respectable track. And then there's, hookers and blow Hunter.
Dropping the N-word Hunter. Imagine if they had an incident of Donald Trump Jr. using the N-word just once. He's on audio using it multiple times.
Oh, but that's different. He was joking. I don't know. This is one of those things that if we were like, you know, and now Brian Stelter on the Newsbusters podcast. This was the kind of questions he would get under duress.
Yes.
He'd probably be, sweating like a guy under investigation on 60 Minutes, or even like the Martin Short character in the Saturday Night Live skit on 60 Minutes. You know, tell us how much you'd cover Hunter Biden using the N-word.
By the way, don't be scared, Brian. You're welcome to come on our podcast anytime. Consider an open invite.
It is an open invite. He and Oliver Darcy can come in tandem if they want. So let's go through some of the Hunter Biden stories that the networks could have done. So on October 12, the Daily Mail out of the UK reported this. President Joe Biden could become embroiled in an FBI investigation of Hunter's finances, experts say, as emails reveal the father and son shared accounts and paid each other's bills. This one, to me, of everything that you've put together here, is the most interesting and the one that really questions Biden's statements, because he's always sort of suggested that he doesn't monkey in his son's businesses and he doesn't tell him what to do.
But yeah, he's always sort of put up this, oh, there's this wall between what I do and what my sons have done and my family. No, this right here could really directly tie to the White House, to the Oval Office.
And every network knows this. You know, CNN knows this. You know, again, there's an FBI investigation into Hunter Biden's finances. Now, do you think, yes, in our alternative universe, that would be CNN's bread and butter. That would be the new version of the Mueller investigation, right? I mean, obviously they're not going to say there's Russian collusion. But, you know, Hunter did a lot of Ukrainian collusion. And their whole take on it was, well, we need to impeach Trump because he said, hey, somebody should look into Hunter Biden. That was the impeachable offense. So the story also said, this is where it gets salacious, Hunter's claim that he and his father shared a bank account also raises serious questions whether funds from the alleged joint account were used for Hunter's week-long bender with a prostitute in May of 2018.
It's not an unfair question to ask. I mean, if they're sharing funds, who knows?
Well, I mean, this is just the kind of story that you would think. If you're a journalist, if you're a reporter, that's a real reporting story. So just how much did the networks do on this one, Jeff?
0 seconds.
This is, you know, again, it's one thing to say sometimes that they'll give something 30. A lot of times we'll say we use the word anchor brief. So sometimes that's the case. But it's a little stunning that what we're going to see here is them just being treating it like this is not news. On October 9, the New York Post reported a federal COVID loan to the art gallery repping Hunter Biden more than doubled after his Father Took Office records show. The gallery initially received a $150,000 COVID disaster assistance loan from the Small Business Administration last year, according to public records. But the loan was recently revised, with the SBA approving a further $350,000 to the Soho Gallery this summer, records show. So there's a $500,000 going to Hunter Biden's art gallery from the federal government. How much did that get from ABC, CBS, and NBC, Jeff?
0 seconds.
We need to put an echo on that.
Zero seconds.
But this is just the kind of thing where we know that if their name was Trump, that this would be something. You know, the Washington Post had this reporter, still does, has a reporter named David Fahrenthold. And his whole beat is the Trump family and all their business affairs. Now, that's certainly a justifiable place to put someone while the Trumps are running the White House. But, you know, Biden takes over, and not only was David Fahrenthold is still on the Trump family finances, there's no David Fahrenthold on the Biden family finances. I would have thought the natural sense is you would have taken David Fahrenthold and put him, just switched him over, and now he could be on the Biden family finances. This is just something that they're obviously showing that they don't want to cover. Then there's this from FoxNews.com on October 7. President Biden's brother-in-law, John Owens, reached out to Hunter Biden in 2014 for help in securing a business license to expand his telemedicine company in China, saying it needed to be, quote-unquote, secured very quickly, according to emails obtained by Fox News. Owens continued by saying he would be most appreciative of any help. Hunter Biden replied less than an hour later and said, "Working on it, back to you, ASAP." The younger Biden then forwarded Jack Owens' email to Thornton Group Chairman James Bulger, this is where they like the juice, the nephew of mobster Whitey Bulger and co-founder of the Thornton Group. So the first question we ask ourselves is, who is John Owens, the brother-in-law? Well, obviously, Biden has one sister, his sister Valerie, and that's her husband. And apparently, John or Jack Owens was Biden's best friend at law school in Syracuse. And yet, everybody's like, who's that guy? So here's this whole story on Hunter helping out Biden's brother-in-law about business in China, our big enemy. How much coverage, Jeff?
Actually, they spent a half hour. No, I'm kidding.
0 seconds, Tim. 0 seconds.
I'm just going to go back and hit this over and over again. You know, Valerie Biden has run every campaign up until the presidential campaign in 2020. Valerie Biden Owens now has run every campaign of Biden's for the U.S. Senate. She's very, very close, and his Biden's strategist. So the idea that she's not interesting, it actually reminds me of the other Valerie, and that is Valerie Jarrett. Valerie Jarrett, a very powerful player inside the Obama administration. They weren't investigating Valerie Jarrett's businesses or whatever she was doing. Her daughter gets to be a CNN anchor now, I guess. But yes, Valerie's 3 years younger than Joe. Then there's his brother Jim, who's 7 years younger than Joe. And then there's his brother Frank, who's 11 years younger than Joe. And all of these people figure in the Biden business affairs. And so this is one of those things we keep saying to people. You don't know who these people are. They're certainly not being mocked as idiots on Saturday Night Live the way that the Trump siblings were, or the way that Ivanka Trump was. You know, Hunter Biden, they gave him what? 2 minutes, played by Pete Davidson. And it was played for giggles. They're not doing stories like this.
Remember on a Weekend Update, Donald and Eric Trump, that was a running gag. I mean, again, in a bizarre world, SNL would have, you would know Hunter Biden, you would know Jack Owens. They would be a running gag.
Yeah.
You know, hello Babylon B, idea for a sketch.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the important thing is that we should underscore when it comes to scandals. You know, Hollywood kicks into all these things. So, yes, there was not only the media coverage of the Trump scandals or the Trump family. There was also all the mockery on the satire shows. Then it becomes, you know, oh, serious TV miniseries, the Comey rule, you know, how Trump was corrupt. You know what I mean? And there's... Yeah. Hollywood kicks into gear on these things. There's not going to be a Hunter Biden miniseries. I mean, imagine how much fun you could have with that.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, just it writes itself. It'd have to be a five-parter at the least.
So now back to the budding art career of Hunter Biden. He's given up all of his, supposedly, all of his terrible lifestyle. You know, settled down, married again. Has a baby that's about the same age as the stripper baby. What? He had a baby with a stripper? No, not coverage 0 seconds.
Yeah.
All right. On to October 7, back to the New York Post. At least 5 prints of Hunter Biden's artwork. Prints have already been sold for $75,000 each, and a team of lawyers is vetting potential patrons who plan to attend his upcoming gallery show in New York City, which has been delayed until the spring, the Post has learned. The Georges Berges Gallery sold the prints before the October 1 opening of a pop-up presentation in Los Angeles, a source familiar with the matter said. Total network coverage, Jeff.
0 seconds.
Yes. Now, we could say, you were very nice, you tried to say, well, if we go all the way back to July.
3 months ago.
We get...
Literally the last time Hunter Biden's name has been uttered on the evening news, 3 months ago.
Yeah. So Stephanie Gosk did a piece, 2 minutes, 16 seconds. And that was, that piece itself was, you know, it was a sober and serious story. It didn't mock the thing, but it was the sort of thing where NBC kind of said, yeah, this is a thing.
Yeah.
And that's, again, the whole problem with omission is that they try to say, well, that's not a thing. That's where the omission matters. They, you know, it'd say, well, you go to the Thanksgiving table and say, well, what about all the Biden scandals? And they're like, what Biden scandals? There are no Biden scandals. I mean, at least at this juncture, we're not getting what we got under Obama, which was the scandal-free Obama administration. I mean, that's where they really...
Clean as a whistle, right, yeah.
That's where you really get mad at them, where it's like, okay, it's one thing if you're going to skip every scandal. It's another thing, and then you come out, and you're so daring, you have so much arrogance that you're going to claim there were no scandals under Obama. Back to the art again... On September 23, the New York Post, still on this story, Hunter Biden's upcoming art show is facing a fresh coat of scrutiny. The ranking Republican on the House Oversight Committee is demanding the gallery owner hosting the exhibition detail the ethics rules in place to block the identities of the buyers from the White House. The art show could earn the first son millions. Congressman James Comer of Kentucky sent a letter obtained by the Post to Hunter's New York art dealer, insisting he provide documents about the ethical arrangements and so on. So the Republicans want to investigate this officially. So a congressional investigation, you'd think that would get some coverage, right?
Right. And that's what prompted the two-minute Gosk piece when Congress actually started looking at it. But this, again, and referring back to like $75,000 a pop for a print, not an original, a print. This is very swampy. I mean, we'll go way back, but it reminds me of the James Wright book scandal.
Reflections of a Public Man, the worst book ever sold.
But this is how they get around, you know, basically, I'm not going to give you a cash bribe, but I'll pay you $75,000 for your wonderful artwork. And, you know, yeah, maybe I'll get access to the President of the United States.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that the Walter Schaub, we should mention, who was totally an ethical scold of the Trump administration, who was a favorite on CNN and MSNBC, hammering the ethics of the Trumps, is still sounding this note. Now he's like, you know, hello, crying into the wind, because they don't care now about ethics when it comes to the Bidens. Then there's this one, same day as the other story, September 23. We go back to the Daily Mail. Obviously, these stories just must not be read by so-called well-read journalists.
Yeah.
You know, We love reporting. We can also say this. None of these things are going to earn a Pulitzer Prize.
Right.
Because we all know the Pulitzer Prize is rigged. You know, lots of people won prizes for Trump exposing things. We find this all the time. You know, we can go back to Clinton. I made this point under Clinton. You know, people didn't get Pulitzer Prizes for exposing Clinton scandals. Maureen Dowd got one for writing about Monica Lewinsky. Maybe that's the exception, but that's, you know, that's for commentary, not for reporting. Anyway, the Daily Mail reported on September 23, a pair of emails from business associates of Hunter Biden reveal he offered to help them unfreeze Libyan assets for a $2 million retainer plus quote-unquote success fees, while they also discussed their misgivings over his drug and alcohol use. The email exchanges were between mid-level Democratic donors Sam Johari and Sheikh Mohammed al-Rabbani, who in 2015 were both working on behalf of the new Libyan government to free up $30 billion in state foreign assets. They had been frozen by the Obama administration under the deposed Muammar Gaddafi regime in 2011. Here again, Libyan assets. I mean, that's, again, a swampy dictatorship. That, you know, an enemy of the United States like China, or at least they certainly were under Gaddafi. And so how much coverage did this one get?
0 seconds.
I mean, should I even have to ask at this point? This one maybe you could argue is a little bit nerdier, but there's also a bunch of money exchanging hands.
But it's just, again, it shows you that this is corruption at the highest order. You've got, you know, these business associates, offered to come in to Hunter Biden. It's like, hey, can we get this money unfrozen? They know that at the time his dad is in the Obama administration. Can you hook us up? And it's like, this is worse than swamp. If this is all true and accurate, this is outright corruption.
Yeah, I mean, and you have here, of course, on screen, the Fox News Channel, with the words on screen, the $2 million man, Hunter sought retainer success fees from Libya. It's not hard to frame this story as an actual real news story, and they just choose not to.
There's also a, you know, I mean, not to make fun of anybody's, you know, substance abuses, but like, making your SNL point, there's a comical aspect where even his business associates are like, can we really trust Hunter to deliver? Because, you know, he's got that, you know, drinky problem. So, again, there's just so many ways this could have coverage. These are not boring stories.
No,
you know, they if this was a Republican administration or Donald Trump Jr., they would be leading broadcasts.
Yes, I this is where we giggle and share out the. I want to say I know this was a Jonathan Alter phrase, if not a lot of liberal media phrases. You know. Our only bias is in favor of a good story. Yeah, right. So what else did you have on your list of things that they could have done?
Okay, well, yeah, this was this summer, August 11th, Daily Mail reporting about Hunter Biden claimed Russians stole another one of his laptops for blackmail while he was close to overdosing in a Las Vegas hotel room. Again, Ryan Murphy, you got a show in the making here. I'm sorry. This is perfect for Ryan Murphy. The alleged incident would mean Hunter lost a total of 3 computers. So basically, this was him with his prostitute just going, oh, geez, I think I lost another laptop. And again, 0 seconds on the evening.
Well, this is where the joke would be, you know, if we're not going to discover the first laptop, we're not going to cover laptops 2 and 3.
Yeah, so there's, you know, not safe for work emails here, but again, it's just like, I don't know, if you want to go from like the boring, sober, corruption, swampy story angle, you could come from that angle. If you wanted to go with a titillating aspect, Hunter has scandals for that too. So there's so many ways to go with these stories, and they keep coming. These aren't like old stories. They make the point in the article. It's not like the media can say, you know, or the producers at these evening news shows can say, well, that's just an old campaign 2020 story by Hunter Biden's laptop. No, these revelations keep coming.
Yes, they do. I like it. This actually is sort of the response. The first response we have to this is like, but yeah, and then there's the N-word thing that you were mentioning.
Yes, that was June 8th story. Daily Mail reported. Hunter. He's an SNL character. I'm sorry, he is. So he's talking to his, they're emailing his lawyer. I think it was $845 per hour lawyer.
Oh boy. Well, if he got $2 million from the Libyans,
well, that's true.
He's got
the cash to drop. Yeah, $845 per hour lawyer, and he's sending them these emails, and he's like being really buddy, and he's dropping the N-word, calling him the N-word, and please just go read the article. I don't want to repeat it here, but it's again, 0 seconds. Imagine Donald Trump Jr. dropping the N-word multiple times in audio. Again, would lead the broadcast, probably would be weeks long of coverage.
Well, the obvious point here, Jeff, and the way that this story is suddenly relevant again is John Gruden couldn't send emails like this.
That's right.
Coach of the Oakland Raiders gets fired. But, you know, the news media, when they do cover Hunter Biden, the one that you either crack up or you throw it across the room. But, you know, yeah, the New York Times did one of these stories about how art gives Hunter peace. His delightful watercolors, you know, as he drives his Porsche to his new home in California. You know, I mean, the actual coverage he gets when he gets coverage has been syrupy and sickening. And so, obviously, one of the reasons we understand they don't want to do these stories is it reflects badly on Joe Biden's parenting.
Oh, there is that too. Yeah, but
you know, Dagan McDowell made this point a couple weekends ago, which is like, Joe Biden's going to lecture everybody how to parent their kids, the dad of Hunter Biden.
Well, you see this all the time. I mean, I can even go, you know, I was born and raised in this area, and you see sons of successful people and daughters of successful people where they're just kind of like born on third base, and some really work hard and find their own way, and others just kind of, like in the case of Hunter Biden, just live off the coattails of their successful parents. I mean, quite frankly, same with Al Gore. He was the son of, it's another case where it's just like, it's very swampy in this town.
Yeah. Well, and you underline, yes, this goes back to some of the old stories we used to do, which was, you know, yes, Al Gore Jr., his son got arrested for like speeding at 90 miles an hour. They didn't want to do that story.
That's right.
And he was more of a kid. You know, we all giggle now because they're like, Hunter Biden, the tender aged 50 something, you know, child of the president.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, they all made it a huge story when the Bush daughters got carded or, you
right.
know, who were drinking underage in Austin. That was a bigger story than this stuff is. I mean, he's in his 50s. So this is one of those things that I think we're going to come back to, because we want people to understand that there are such things as the Biden family scandals. And just understand that this is a story or a set of stories that the liberal media just don't want to do. And that's why we do need a conservative media, because obviously the so-called mainstream media is like the cop in the donut shop, if we're going to make negative stereotypes of police. They sit there and they don't do anything on that. Did you have a final thought, Jeff, about this trend?
Well, one more story here that just sort of destroys the idea that Joe Biden had this wall with his Hunter Biden and his family. So Hunter... this is Breitbart.com reporting this. Hunter Biden took 411 trips across 29 countries between 2009 and the middle of 2014 on Air Force One or Air Force Two. So again, that's really goes to this lie of like there's an absolute law between them. Absolute wall between Hunter and Joe Biden when it comes to their business endeavors.
Yeah, and I think that what that says to some extent is, yeah, we remember this picture of Hunter Biden getting off Air Force Two with Joe Biden in China, and obviously that becomes a sales picture to say, you know, I'm in tight with the vice president.
Exactly.
He's my dad. Flying in on Air Force One or Air Force Two is like bringing your business card. So that is why it should be a news story. And so we are going to stay on this here. We're trying to put the Jeff and Scott Whitlock are trying to Bill D'Agostino are putting the middle name research into the Middle Media Research Center. So if you want to read about this stuff, definitely check out this stuff at Jeff's personal, you know, author/Jeffrey-Dickens. Follow Jeff at GC Dickens on Twitter and Scott Whitlock at Scott JW. And come see us at Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.